Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode of Lending Forward. I am your host, Hannah McManus, and I am extremely excited to be joined today by Laura Arce. Laura is the SVP of Economic Initiatives at Unidos US, and we are going to talk all about Hispanic homeownership today. So thanks so much for joining the podcast. Hey, Laura.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you so much. I'm excited to have this conversation and appreciate being invited back.
Yeah, we had you on our Engaged webinar series about a month ago, and I thought that was so interesting, and you gave us so much information. So I'm excited to dig in a little bit more and go a little deeper around some of the things you touched on. So before we get started, tell me a little bit about Unidos US and what you all are doing.
Yeah, so thank you. So Unidos US is a national civil rights organization. And so that really is our North Star. And I often say the work that we do is all about closing gaps. So whether it's education gaps, health gaps, opportunity gaps, and the work that I do is very squarely focused on the homeownership gap. And, you know, we're a multi-issue organization. So we work, I have colleagues who work on health, education, workforce, civic engagement, and then certainly housing is one of our priority areas. Another thing about Unidos is that we're intermediary, and that means that we're not a direct service provider. We're not out there building housing or making loans or sitting down with clients one-on-one. But what we do instead is we support community-based organizations. We advance policy at the federal and state levels. We do a lot of research. We run programs regionally and locally, and we work on communications. We'd like to do a lot of storytelling for the work that we do. And maybe the last thing I'll share about Unidos that I think is one of our superpowers is we have a national network of community-based affiliates, over 300 affiliates across the country. And they're the ones who are in local communities every day helping, you know, local residents with whatever their issues or challenges might be.
I love that. And I know we've been working or partnered with you for, I think it's been over a year at this point, and we've learned so much from you. So we appreciate all of the things that Unidos US is doing. So talk to me a little bit about closing these gaps. How are you all working to close the home ownership gaps?
Yeah. So, you know, I wish there was an easy button to this challenge. But the work we do, it's focused around three areas. You know, one is policy. You know, public policy is really important. We know that the housing sector in general, and especially the mortgage sector, are highly regulated. There's a lot of government involvement in terms of what, you know, lenders and others can do or not do. And so we look at regulations. We look at where there's gaps around legislation or public policy, both at the federal and the state level. So things like around, you know, lending requirements. And we certainly want guardrails for consumer protection. You know, sometimes there are, you know, unintentional consequences of public policy that actually limit and restrict. And so, you know, we try to be open-minded about that and advocate for that through that work, you know, in Washington, D.C. and also in some of our priority states at the state capitol. Another thing we really focus on is research. You know, we think data analytics and research are really critical to informing the best public policies, as well as stronger and more effective market practices. You know, I think we can all agree that if we look back at the mortgage sector over the last, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, people live their economic lives very differently today than they did back then. But the mortgage market, you know, it's conservative. And I think, you know, rightly so. You know, we don't want to get too crazy in terms of, you know, expanding, you know, increasing access to credit in ways that are detrimental to families. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of modernizing we can do in research and data help us kind of identify what those gaps are and are we really assessing credit risk the right way. So those are some of the ways that we do the work that we do to advance, you know, changes we want to see.
So you mentioned focus states. Are there specific, like, are there pockets of the country that are more, I guess, highly populated that we should, as a lending community, be focused on serving?
Yeah, so I think this is a really great question. So I'm going to answer it in a couple different ways. The first thing I'll note just about Unidos, we work nationwide. We do have four priority states, and they're California, Texas, Arizona, and Florida. And collectively, those states, you know, the majority of Latinos in the U.S. live in one of those states. Mm-hmm. However, you know, Hispanics are in every state, you know, in the union. And so the work is broader, but those are just places where we do a little more focus and concentration. But it's really interesting to look at where we've seen growth in Hispanic homeownership and where we see opportunity. And, you know, a couple of things that if you know, especially looking at the data in the last couple of years, that's been interesting to me is it's clear that Latinos are willing to relocate for the purpose of accessing homeownership, you know, and in some cases that might mean moving to a different part of the state, or it might mean moving across the country. And so while there's certainly really strong, you know, Hispanic population percentages in states like Texas and Florida and, you know, California, we've seen a lot of movement of Hispanics to what, you know, might relatively be more affordable states, you know, places like Georgia and North Carolina, Illinois, you know, Pennsylvania. And so I think, you know, it's important to kind of look both broadly and specifically in those places.
That's interesting. Have you guys, is the data showing, or have you done the research of, I mean, yes, affordability is one thing, but are there other factors that they're open to moving for, or, you know, reasons why they are willing to relocate for homeownership?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the broader goal of economic opportunity. And homeownership, you know, access, housing affordability is a piece of that. But certainly, you know, job prospects, you know, better quality of life, whether it's better schools. And so, you know, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of internal migration of Latinos to different parts of the country. And I think a lot of the key driving forces are things like around economic opportunity.
Yeah. So this is a two-part question for you. I really want us to dig into kind of the unique challenges that Hispanic home buyers are facing. That's part one. But then part two, because our listeners are, the majority of our listener base is loan officers and agents. So part two of that question is, how can we as a lending and real estate community better support our Hispanic home buyers in overcoming those hurdles?
Yeah. So I'll start with, you know, the real big challenge, kind of a headline challenge for Hispanic home buyers is honestly what most home buyers are facing right now. So it's the combination of, you know, lack of housing affordability combined with lack of inventory in a lot of markets across the country. And so you have that as a backdrop for anyone. When you look at Hispanic mortgage applicants, you know, specifically, I think there are three things that jump out at me. You know, first, you know, is I'm sure your listeners know, the number one denial reason for a Hispanic mortgage applicant is debt to income, DTI. And looking at it from the lens of a Hispanic borrower, you know, a lot of that has to do with one, high housing costs. And so there is this concentration of Hispanics in high cost markets such as California. But, you know, that's increasingly an issue in many states. And then the other, you know, generally speaking, if you look at trends around median income relative to median home prices, you know, Hispanics tend to have lower median incomes, you know, compared to other households in most markets of the country. And so you add that to that, the housing affordability, you know, your debt to income ratio is going to it's going to skew. And it's for a lot of folks, that's a really big challenge, especially right now with, you know, relative, you know, the interest rates, you know, in recent, the last past year plus being relatively higher than they have been, you know, in the years leading up to, you know, through the pandemic. A second big issue is credit history. Okay. And so, you know, Latinos are more likely than other groups to either have poor credit or be credit invisible, meaning not having any credit history. And I think, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that. You know, certainly, you know, Hispanics are also less likely to be banked or be in the formal financial sector, which I think is very much related to building that credit history. You know, I think also for a lot of Latinos, I mean, not all, but certainly those who are newer immigrants and closer to the immigration, you know, story in their family, you know, the cultural attitudes towards debt is very different in other countries as it is in the U.S. And so part of that is understanding what the credit norms are in the U.S. and what's expected. So
will you go deeper into that? I mean, what are the... Because, I mean, I was born here. I've lived here my whole life. I only know one way. What, you know, talk to me about our normal versus.
Right.
So what they consider normal, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm going to share a little bit of a personal story that for me really illustrates it. And I think I've seen it and I've heard it from others that my best friend in college, her parents helped her buy a car when she was going to college. And they basically paid for it. But what they did is rather, even though they could have paid cash for the car, they created a bank account where they put all the money for the car and then set up the payments to be automatically deducted every month. And she never had to touch it or worry about it. And so, you know, she was building, her parents knew she was 18 going off to college and she needed to start building really strong credit. On the other hand, when I think about my family, and I often, you know, like to talk about my grandfather, who really did not believe in credit at all. He thought it was a bad thing to be in debt to someone. And, you know, his story is, you know, he had a bank account where he saved his money and that was it. He never had a credit card. He lived most of his adult life in the U.S. And every month when he would get his utility or his phone bill, he would go downtown to the main office and he would pay that bill in cash and ask for a receipt, you know, with the official paid stamp on it. And he would save those receipts for years. And so, you know, certainly it never would have occurred to him or my parents, you know, at 18 to help set up a system like my friend's family did to help her build that strong credit.
I love that story so much. I mean, that's the stories that you hear is like, you know, there's cash under the mattress or, you know, there's cash, there's plenty of money, there's no credit.
Right.
You hear decent amount.
Of course, yeah. And intuitively, it's not a bad thing, right? I mean, it's like, it's, you know, not having, you know, I mean, I would love to not have a mortgage anymore and have that paid off and not have any debt. And so, you know, not having around you. So I think for, you know, a lot of, you know, immigrants, especially, you know, again, in the U.S., there's a little more of a nuanced understanding about certainly you'd want to be in over your head. You know, credit card interest rates are really high right now. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's responsible ways to use credit. And that credit score means so much. And I think if you, you know, for some folks, that's a little more intuitive than for maybe more recent immigrants.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is education around the importance of credit is very, very important when talking to, you know, especially first time home buyers in this community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you think about what loan officers, you know, agents and others who are working with Hispanic home buyers can do, especially to your point, I think first time home buyers, and I would even say like first generation home buyers, mm-hmm. you know, all of that education is so critical. You know, for a lot of folks who are maybe the first in their families to buy a home, you know, they may not have grown up with that, you know, kind of understanding of like, oh, the, you know, mortgage payment and what that means. And they may not have someone who's a trusted, you know, family member or someone close to the family who can give them advice around selecting the right house or selecting the right mortgage product. And so I think, you know, education around what the process is, what's needed, how to build strong credit or improve your credit so that you can get better terms on, you know, on your mortgage are really important. And, you know, I'll say that, you know, Hispanics are really motivated around homeownership. It's something that just consistently when I talk with families and individuals across the country, it's something that's like, you know, that's certainly very high on the list of life goals, and it's a marker of success, you know, for being in this country. And so I think what that means is if you help a Hispanic home buyer understand the process, give them a roadmap, even if that journey is going to take longer than they thought because they need to work on their credit, they need to save a little bit more in down payment, whatever that might be. You know, I have found consistently that people will do the hard work. They'll make the sacrifices. They just want to know what the steps are needed to get there, and they'll work toward that goal.
That's awesome. When it comes to education, I know there's data around how millennials adjust education and how Gen Zs, and, you know, everyone takes in information differently and everyone gets advice in a different form or fashion. So have you guys done any research around how, you know, the Hispanic community would prefer to be educated?
Yeah, you know, I think there's certainly, of course, nuance. It's hard sometimes to make generalizations, but I think there are a few things that jump out at me. And I think your point around the generations and age is a real key definition, whether you're Hispanic or not. Mm-hmm. And so certainly when I started working, you know, in the space over 20 years ago, we talked a lot about the importance of like in-person, one-on-one counseling and education. And I think for a lot of people, they still want that. You know, they want to have like the booklet in front of them. They want someone to sit down with them and really, really, you know, kind of talk them through the process, help them understand their situation. But, you know, Hispanics, you know, one of the demographic trends that we're seeing is that Hispanics are, you know, the median age of Latinos is much younger than the population overall. And so we're certainly over-indexed in younger folks. And, you know, we just like all, you know, younger, you know, people in the United States, like we're just much more tech savvy. We're much more comfortable doing things, you know, on our phone, just, you know, holding there. So I think certainly for a lot of the younger generation, I think, you know, apps and having, you know, roadmaps, you know, in terms of, you know, see where you are in the process are really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about language barriers. You know, when you say younger generation, I'm thinking there's more bilingual Hispanics in America than non-bilingual. Am I totally off base in saying that?
No. I think it's a really great point. And I think it's also something that's a little more nuanced than sometimes people talk about. Like, I mean, you know, there's a lot of work in the public policy space around language access. And, you know, we talk about people with limited English proficiency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within the Hispanic community, it's not one or the other, you know, necessarily. And so certainly I would say, you know, 70% of Hispanics in the U.S. are born in the U.S. And so we were born here, we grew up here, we're native English speakers. You know, if you're an immigrant, your level of English is going to really depend on what, you know, what capacity in English you had arriving in this country and how long you've been here. You know, for most, you know, immigrants, the longer they've been here, the stronger they are and more comfortable they are in English. But then there's this middle ground of, you know, this, you know, being bilingual, you know, multilingual. And I think within the Hispanic community, one is just understanding first kind of what people's preferred language is. And I have found that it often depends on the situation. And so on the one hand, you could talk about, you know, buying a house, you know, going through the mortgage process, it's complicated and confusing for anybody, no matter, you know, what language, right? Even if you're a native English speaker. And so for some individuals, they really, it's really important to them that they, you know, that they have the information in Spanish, you know, in the language that they're most comfortable with, both verbally and documentation. On the other hand, for those, which I think is the majority of Hispanics in the U.S. who are some level of bilingual, you know, comfortable in both English and Spanish, they might be more comfortable talking with their family and their friends in Spanish and having more social interactions. But because chances are that they did most of their education in the U.S., more kind of technical terms, which the mortgage process has plenty of those, you know, they're going to be potentially more comfortable in English for that type of transaction. So I think it's really important to just have a really good sense of for that consumer and not make assumptions based on their, you know, how long they've been in the country or what generation they are. And just one other point I would make about language is for a lot of Hispanics, it's a cultural point of pride. And so I think when, you know, lenders and others, when they do marketing in Spanish, when they do, you know, bilingual, when they have Spanish speaking loan officers, even if that's not necessary, you know, like for me, for example, I'm very comfortable doing, you know, I honestly, I would prefer to do the whole process in English. But when I see a company, you know, that is, you know, reaching out through language, I relate more to that company and it builds a level of trust and like, oh, they see me. And so I would say that even beyond just what someone wants, what language you want for the process, there is a strong value in language as a cultural representation.
And that kind of leads me to my next question, which I don't know if you guys have data on this, but if you do, I'd love to hear it, is how are homeowners or home buyers finding their real estate agent or their preferred lender? I mean, are they going online? Are they doing their homework first, or is it word of mouth, or is it because of a friend? I mean, how do they prefer to find someone?
Yeah. So I don't have the hard data, but just in talking with, you know, housing counselors and home buyers in different parts of the country, I think, you know, the number one method right now is still that trusted word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And so people are going to ask, you know, I should take a step back. We did a poll. It's not about a year and a half old now around, you know, who do you trust, you know, for mm-hmm. information. It was specific around housing and mortgages. And the top two or three responses were all around, you know, family, friends, coworkers, and especially if they have gone through the process themselves mm-hmm. already. And so that's going to be the first place they're going to, if they know that their cousin successfully bought a house, they're going to, and you know, they don't know where to start, they're going to ask their cousin, how did you do it? Who do you know? And if the cousin was happy with their, you know, realtor or their loan officer, they're going to pass along that contact information. So I think that's still a really, really powerful, you know, way to think about it within the Hispanic community. But then of course, you know, again, now, especially with a lot of the younger generation, you know, online searches mm-hmm. is still, you know, really, really common, especially if you're kind of trying to find someone in your area. And I would say there that sometimes the information can be really overwhelming. And so it's really helpful to have someone who can kind of help you navigate the process. But that would be a secondary. But I think that trusted, you know, source of information is still the number one way that people find their contacts.
Okay. I know I didn't want to get into this, but we're recording on November 7th, so I have to ask. And I know it's early, but, you know, with a new administration moving into office in January, what do you think that means for the Hispanic, for Hispanic homeownership in general?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one thing that was very clear from the election and honestly leading up to it, I mean, we've done polling, others have done polling, that the economy, cost of living, and specifically housing, you know, housing affordability, whether it's, you know, rents, which have impact on being able to, you know, save for down payment, or the cost of, you know, buying that first, you know, starter house. That was a really big top issue for the electorate. And so, you know, I'm optimistic that because one, it was such a clear, I feel like that's really the primary mandate that the voters communicated, you know, on election day. And that combined that if you look at any of the data, you know, housing affordability, housing access is a challenge right now everywhere. You know, a number of years ago, it felt very much like a coastal issue. But now it's in every state in the country, urban areas, rural areas, suburban areas, red states, blue states, purple states. And so I'm really optimistic that, you know, policymakers are going to see that. And it's, you know, it's certainly the new administration coming in. It's the new, you know, Congress that will be sworn in, you know, in January. And I would be shocked if housing policy, whether it's around, you know, expanding the building of affordable housing for both homeownership and rental, as well as pathways for, you know, first time buyers to, you know, access homeownership. Like, I would be shocked if those weren't very high on the list, especially when we think about the high likelihood that we're going to see a new tax package next year. So I think some of that will be delivered through taxes, through a tax reform.
Okay. Before I ask you our signature question, is there anything that our listeners, and again, they're mostly, you know, loan officers and agents, going into 2025, anything that should be top of mind for them on ways to build trust and educate and really serve the Hispanic communities that they're in?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a few things that they can do. I mean, first, you know, the earlier point about, you know, just understanding where an individual home buyer and their family, where they are, you know, and that happens, you know, regardless. But certainly for Hispanic, you know, home buyers, thinking about things like, you know, not just, you know, what's the process and what's the pathway for me, but even things, you know, Hispanics are more likely to be self-employed or have gig work, you know, that can add complexity to the underwriting process. You know, Hispanics also have larger household sizes, start families younger, are more likely to live in multi-generational households. So what are the implications for that in terms of both the type of house they need, but also thinking about how they potentially combine resources in order to afford, you know, a mortgage. And so I think just having that really, that strong understanding, I think secondly, is being really honest about what the pathway is for that individual. And again, for some folks, it might be, and they might be ready now, others it might be months. And for some, you know, it might be a year or 2 years, you know, that what their journey is. But clearly, you know, like not just kind of turning them away if they're not ready, but explaining to them, this is the pathway. I mean, that's why they may not be the customer today, but if they trust that you've given them the right information, you know, they'll certainly come back and then they'll refer all of their cousins and friends. And then the last, you know, piece I would offer is another potential resource is, especially for those home buyers that really have a longer path in front of them around whether it's repairing credit or saving for a down payment. I would encourage loan officers and, you know, real estate agents to think about the resources around, you know, nonprofit housing counselors who are often, you know, that it's a free resource. You know, we have a network and they're often willing to work with, you know, home buyers in that longer journey and then kind of refer back to the loan officer. You know, when that time is right, because we know everyone's busy and maybe that handholding over 2 years isn't the best use of time for everybody.
That's really great advice. And I mean, I'm really excited about the future of Hispanic homeownership. I think we've made big strides and I think there's a lot of big strides to still come. But just in talking to you, it sounds like if you can provide that additional service, that extra handholding, and, you know, make it really special for those home buyers. I mean, the loyalty is there. And I think it'll, I don't want to say pay dividends, but I mean, it'll, the 2 years of work will, you'll make up for the 2 years of work.
Yes. So, yeah. No, I believe that very much. I think that's true.
Well, I can't let you leave without asking our signature question, which is, how are you going to lend it forward in 2025?
Oh my goodness. You know, I should have been prepared and invested.
I know. I should have prepared. I'm sorry. And you can take it any way you want to take it.
Yeah. No, but you know, I think for me, just really, you know, continuing the work that I'm doing and elevating the importance of Hispanic homeownership, not just for Hispanic families and the Hispanic community, but the country as a whole. I mean, demographically, Hispanics, you know, are increasingly, you know, the future of housing and homeownership in this country. So I think for me, you know, I'm going to be advocating around public policies and especially around any tax proposals that are going to be targeted to helping that first time home buyer, whether it's through some type of down payment assistance or incentives to build more affordable entry level homes. So that's what I'm, you know, preparing for and planning on focusing on in 2025.
That's awesome. Well, I so much appreciate you coming on. You're turning into a friend of Lending Forward in Atlantic Bay. So we very much appreciate you and hope you have a great rest of the year.
Yeah, you too. And I look forward to hopefully being invited back sometime in 2025.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.